In today's episode, I have invited Monique Coven. She's a new friend of mine. She's the host of the Healing Trauma Podcast, and many of you may already be familiar with the podcast. It's a great resource for anyone recovering from trauma. She has top experts in the field on the podcast, and she's recently introduced a faith focus to the podcast. And Monique's got a powerful story to share with us today about how she learned to name trauma and how learning to name it set her on a path toward healing. This is such a powerful episode for everyone. As you listen, listen for yourself, but also listen for your friends, for your loved ones who may be experiencing these symptoms that are in fact potentially signs of past trauma. It's so critical to name trauma correctly in order to heal it. So this episode is such important listening for every single one of us. My guest, Monique Coven, is a certified trauma recovery coach, and she's a survivor of childhood trauma. She's the host of the Healing Trauma Podcast, which I can't recommend highly enough. Please enjoy my conversation with Monique Coven. Monique, I'm so thrilled to have you here. You are doing such beautiful work on the Healing Trauma Podcast with all the things that you offer people who are recovering from trauma. And I'm just thrilled to have this opportunity to get to know more of your story and what has inspired you to do the work that you do. As you and I have talked, I shouldn't feel this way. This new framework I have coming out is about this idea that so often the very first thing we become aware of when we have to dig into our own emotions is this inner guilt, this inner shame sometimes, this inner almost gaslighting that we do to ourselves, trying to get ourselves not to feel the way we feel. And I want to start there because you write so powerfully. And if it's okay, I want to read this. This is your words. You said, "I could not wait until childhood was finally over and I could live free and away from the terror and dread that I experienced in my childhood and teenage years. It was only to realize that it felt like I had not really escaped my childhood after all. I did not understand this because everything on the outside appeared well. I had a career I loved, a beautiful family of my own, and a great community of friends." And I just read that and I thought, oh gosh, I'm imagining you maybe in your early to mid-20s thinking, I've got it, I've done it, I've escaped a really hard situation. Why do I feel the way I feel? Can you talk to us? Put us back in that moment in time. What was that like for you and what was going on inside of you?
Yeah, you described it so well. You know, after we've experienced trauma, we are so happy to be away from it and to start fresh, to start new, to have that life that we dreamed of as children, you know, one of peace and calm and just happiness. And so for me, I had just gotten married. I mean, everything on the outside looked like things should be going really well. And it didn't make sense to me because my body was still feeling sensations, images. I was feeling a lot of hypervigilance. My husband would walk into a room and I'd jump to the ceiling almost. And it just didn't seem to make sense because on the outside, it was over. And here I have this new life, but yet my body was feeling... It was still feeling as if my body was waiting for what happened in the past to happen again.
There was pretty significant both verbal and physical abuse in your childhood. Is that right?
Yeah, there was a lot. I had a disorganized attachment. So that means in my case, a very frightening mother. And this was what I was supposed to attach to. And that was just the beginning, you know? So imagine you don't have that safe place. So there was that. And then there was just chronic chaos, lots and lots of marriages. And I was basically always feeling like I was fighting for my life.
So very little safety, none of that secure attachment. So this is kind of what you're bringing into this marriage with a guy who he walks in the room. He hasn't harmed you. He hasn't hurt you. He's not scary. And yet your body is reacting to him in your early marriage as if he is one of these figures from your past. And I imagine that was very disorienting for you. And so at the time, how did you frame that for yourself? You know, how did you make sense of that? Or did you not know what to do with it?
It wasn't just him. You know, there were really great parts of it. It was really the day-to-day, moment-to-moment life, meaning getting up in the morning, experiencing having your own apartment and the responsibilities of that, going to my work. I was a social worker, going to work. And the whole experience of it was one of feeling like I was in danger all the time. And that looked like, you've got a lot of anxiety, girl.
Okay. And was there a sort of self-shaming component to that? What's wrong with me? Why can't you get it together? Was that part of it for you?
100%. Because it didn't make sense, because I was physically away from my childhood, I was really, really upset with myself, thinking, what is wrong with you? Look at your life. You have everything that you've wanted, and yet you're feeling so anxious.
Yeah, I feel that in my being when I hear you say that, because I think that is so common for people. In the absence of anyone helping us to understand and name what's happening, we tend to blame ourselves and get really hard on ourselves. When you were, in fact, the one, you know, your body was doing what it was conditioned to do. What happened, Monique, as you talked about it? Did you tell people? Who did you tell? And how did that go? Either positive or negative. It might have made it worse sometimes.
I remember when it was happening at the beginning, at my first job, I'd be making lots of notes because I just thought it was so odd how I was feeling. And I didn't really talk about it a whole lot at the beginning. I guess I didn't trust that I could share it. But then later on, I started to talk about it and recognized, okay, I'm feeling a lot. I need to go for some help. I mean, as a social worker, I knew that there's help. And I started to see a variety of people, therapist, doctor, and I was basically told that I have anxiety and, you know, I need to work on the anxiety, and the most effective approach for anxiety is cognitive behavioral therapy. So I need to work with someone who has that. And so I did that. And that didn't seem to work. Found another, tried another. And I just, my body just wouldn't settle when I needed to, because often I would write when I was activated, right? Okay. I'm telling myself that, no, it's not, you know, you're supposed to write the truth of what's sort of happening. And well, I could write the truth, but my body's saying that's not the truth, you know? So it's kind of like you're writing that you are safe, but your body is saying, no, you're not. No, you're not. How do you explain that when you yourself don't even have the words? You try, but they don't understand. And so I kept getting the feedback I kept getting back was, well, you need to just keep trying. And I'd get this look. And of course, I would interpret that as, okay, I must be this client that's not complying, or I must be the one that just can't do it. It was really, really hard.
Yeah, there is really another traumatizing event there. When you go to get help and the help that is being offered you is actually not helping, but you feel responsible for that again.
It even goes deeper than that, because my trauma was actually related around not getting help. So you can imagine, here I'm trying to get help because things are happening that feel like the past and I'm not getting help. I'm told, some tell me, just stay with it. I can share like a particular scenario that I brought because this was really, to me, I could not understand it. So when I was a young mom, I would be exhausted. I had twins. I'd be exhausted at the end of the day. And sometimes I'd leave the dishes and pots for the next day. I'd wake up in the morning and, you know, I'd take my kids to preschool and I would come back and I said, you're going to do the dishes. You're going to, you know, put things away, make it organized. Whenever I would try to do that, my feet would essentially feel frozen on the floor. They wouldn't move. And I'd be like, why can't I do it? And I try, and I could feel my body get more and more activated. And then finally, I couldn't take it anymore. I'd grab my keys and I would run out the door. And I was like, what is that? And it happened every single day. And I'm like, I don't understand this. It makes no sense. Just do the stinking dishes, you know? I could not. And there was a feeling of this feels familiar. And when I brought it to my doctor, she was saying, well, you really need to stay. You need to stay. When actually that was like the worst thing I could do. And so that's just an example of how trauma was showing up in my body and I didn't know how to manage it. I didn't know what to do with it. And of course, I blamed myself.
That is such a powerful example of your body reading a situation that it needed you to understand was real, even if it wasn't real in that moment, right? In that moment, you were safe, but it was almost as if your body was telling you, cueing you, but I have known unsafety in this situation in the past. Please listen to me. And so how did you figure that out, Monique? How did you start to recognize, no, I'm not crazy. My body isn't crazy. There's a memory here. Something has happened that was hard. And I don't know yet what it is. I get that it's not the current situation of the dishes, but something is going on. How did you start to honor that? That's just such a powerful story.
Oh my goodness. Well, like I said, it went on for quite a while. And I remember asking friends, does this ever happen to you? And they'd look at me with blank faces. No. And oh my goodness. Well, it started with recognizing that there's more to this. I've had trauma. And at the time, complex trauma was not recognized, childhood trauma. It was just PTSD. So from a one-time event or a war. And so I remember going to the doctor and of course, it wasn't recognized. That's why I was given the diagnosis of anxiety. Nothing about my childhood was ever even mentioned. And then one day I came across a book by Dr. Judith Herman, and she was the first person to actually define and bring up, hey, there's this other definition. It's not just PTSD. There's complex trauma that can involve childhood experiences that have been repetitive, and it can feel, your body can feel like you've been in a war, and it has lasting impacts. When I read that, I'm like, oh my God, oh my goodness. And I took that book to the doctor that I was telling you about and seeing. I said, I think I'm holding the book. I think I know what's going on. And she looked at me with such a blank face, didn't discuss it. And I guess I kind of, for the time, put it aside for a little time. And just as a note, I've had Dr. Judith Herman on my podcast last year, which was such an honor. But so then what happened was I started to see little peeps on the internet about complex trauma. So I said, you know what, I'm going to get diagnosed professionally. So I met with a psychiatrist and a psychologist that worked together that did all of the evaluations, and it came back complex trauma. Well, when I saw that paper, you can imagine I'm holding that paper and it's like evidence. And I just said, okay, now I'm going to do something about this. And that just started the whole journey of going for the right type of help, the type that is going to address complex trauma. And I started getting trained as a complex trauma recovery coach, certified coach. And yeah, my life just took off at that time.
Man, this is just so powerful. There are so many different directions I can take there. I notice in my body feeling really angry about the care that you got at the time I came up. I think we're probably roughly the same age, and I know exactly what you mean. Everything pointed to cognitive behavioral therapy, which for the listener, it can be a helpful modality when it's correctly prescribed. It's about looking at your thoughts and aligning your thoughts more with reality. But the problem with trauma, and we'll get into this, is that you can have all the rationality in the world. You can be thinking rationally, but your body, your nervous system hasn't gotten that message. Your nervous system is still living in the war, and there's no amount of logic or rationality that can get that message down into your body. And so we know this now, but at the time, it just listening to you breaks my heart for a whole generations of people who were told there's something wrong with you. You're the problem. You're crazy. And even to hear you, your face light up when you got the complex trauma diagnosis, there was freedom in that. That brought you freedom and clarity. I'm not crazy. There's a reason that my body is behaving in the way it behaved. I mean, the resilience in that, the agency in that, Monique, that you had to advocate for yourself, that's remarkable. I wonder now, as you think back to that younger version of you, and what she had to do to get to that point of, no, I'm not crazy here. That's heroic.
Thank you. I guess there was always a part that was like, I'm going to do something about it. And I think one of the first things I did when I got that diagnosis is pretty soon after I started the podcast, I didn't know what I was doing. I was talking in my phone. But one thing I knew for sure is that if I've experienced this, there are so many who are going through that. And I felt I had to do something to help bring a little bit of light, a little bit of education so that they would know, no, you're not crazy. This makes sense.
So Monique, you get this diagnosis and I imagine you're sort of replaying the tape on all the years of getting really bad help and bad advice. So tell me a little bit about that. What was that like for you?
There was a period where I was angry. I was angry. I had to process that. But I know for years, I contemplated, I want to go back to that doctor, the one when I brought in the book, you know, and I kept like, I've even called a couple of times. Is she still there? And I wanted to say, hey, and just voice that out and say, you know, all this time that I came and I, you know, you said it was anxiety. Well, it wasn't, you know, and I was upset about that. And I wanted to also say, and the therapy you recommended, I'm going to tell you why it doesn't work, you know, and I wanted to talk about that. And then, of course, we can talk about the faith community, because that, too, there was some hurt around also not being trauma-informed, which I get it. If the therapist can't even be trauma-informed, how can we expect the faith community to have that understanding? So I was angry for a while.
Yeah, I hear that. And how did you honor that anger? I mean, I hear justifiably you were angry.
Yeah. I think I allowed it because it wasn't destructive. It wasn't an interference. I thought it was a healthy anger. That's what it felt to me like anyway. So that felt good. It felt powerful. There was empowerment there. There was justice for that girl. Because I remembered like, hey, she didn't get help. And then again, she didn't get help. So yeah, some of that.
I love that. I do think anger is very empowering. It's forward moving. It's like, okay, now I can see the truth. I love that justice orientation. So that became a resource to you in a way, that anger. I love that. I think that's important for people to hear. There was a constructive nature to it. You had seen something that other people weren't seeing. And I love that you channeled that anger in many ways into, I'm going to start advocating for other people to get this message, start the podcast, get this word out about the truth about trauma to other people.
And it's a slow process, because I find the church community has changed. They're much more open to mental health now over the years, but there still needs to be that really understanding of what happens when we've experienced trauma, how it's not just the mind, and that just quoting scriptures is not going to change a nervous system that's in dysregulation, that is, you know, overwhelmed because it has experienced chronic trauma, and these are some of the symptoms.
It's interesting, Monique, because you were both part of the therapeutic community as a social worker, and you'd been let down by that community. As a person of faith, you'd been let down by faith communities. So talk to me a little bit about your faith. Were you able to kind of keep your understanding of God separate from how you'd felt let down by faith communities?
I was really able to separate the people, even though some people said some things that really could be very hurtful, some spiritualizing. But I knew, I mean, I've shared with you before, I had a really beautiful experience with God and in my early 20s. And I knew he was real, and I knew he was for me, and I knew he was going to help me. And I just clung to that. He was the safest place that I knew. So it wasn't the church itself. It was God himself was the safest parent person for me.
Both Monique and I talk about these experiences we had early on with God on your podcast, on the Healing Trauma podcast. We'll link to that in the show notes. But I love what you're saying. There was a secure attachment with God that held you through even some of your disappointments with the church. Anything else, Monique, that you want to share about that period of time of kind of wrestling and coming to terms with the reality of your CPTSD?
Well, I think what really helped and even started to provide a sense of compassion for my own experience was when I did some training, some professional training with Deb Dana with the polyvagal theory. And that rocked my world big time. It just changed everything because I really got an understanding of what is happening, what is going on, and how much our bodies make sense. Our responses make sense. And some of the time in the past when I would have these triggers or responses, I would get upset because it didn't make sense. But when I learned about how it does, you know, how our bodies are always looking, you know, underneath awareness, looking and evaluating whether we are safe or whether we're in danger. And because it's happening below awareness, that makes sense. That's why I would walk into a room not thinking anything, but suddenly feeling maybe this powerful feeling inside me. That wasn't coming from my mind. It was coming from a cue my body picked up that may have reminded my body in the past something similar, and I was experiencing it in the present. That brought a lot of compassion.
Wow. Would you be willing, if you're willing, to walk us through that instance of your freeze response in the kitchen with the dishes based on what you know now about the body and about polyvagal theory?
Sure.
What was actually happening there now that you understand it?
Absolutely. So it's so interesting, you know, our brains, and you know this, you know, they're connectors. I was saying on one of my episodes how I've seen this in real action once we were driving in Myrtle Beach. And as I was driving, I heard my brain, and my brain was saying, oh, this town is like that town. That's what we're talking about. That's what brains do. This is like that, or this is similar to that. And so in my kitchen, I would walk in and there would be pots and pans and, you know, all kinds of things. And I've had a lot of trauma, repetitive, sometimes in the kitchen, chaos, complete chaos. And for some reason, my brain made a connection. What happened to me over and over again, and sometimes it was in the kitchen, there was chaos, there was so much disorder and craziness, and I always wanted to run, but often I was stuck. And so it looked at the dishes and the pots and pans that didn't quite fit into the, they were overflowing onto the, and in your, you know, your first instinct is, it's pots and pans, for crying out loud. But to the brain, to my body, it was a reminder, even if it's just a sliver of truth, a sliver of connection, a sliver of a reminder. That's what it did. And I did the right thing. I got out of there. I grabbed those keys because I couldn't do that when I was younger. I was stuck. I was frozen. But this time I grabbed those keys and I ran. And I did that so many times.
That is such a beautiful example of this. Sometimes we call it the work of reparenting, where at the time that it was happening, it was probably still somewhat semi-conscious. You couldn't have pieced together all the dots. But I could also imagine, I don't know if you actually did this, as you're walking yourself through that, to gently become aware of this freeze response makes sense and watch us leave the room. Watch that now, young little part of me, I think of the parts model here, watch that right now I actually have the agency and we can leave. We can leave, right? And as you allow that younger part of you to recognize, oh no, now you have an adult in the room who really loves you and who will care for you and who will get you to safety, that part of you is over time going to become more open to the idea that, okay, these are just pots and pans, right? Right? But you first have to connect with the part, and it so reminds me of the work of parenting our own children, right? We first have to connect with them. They're scared of something. They're scared of the dark closet. They're scared of the cobwebs. And we're not sitting there saying to them, you shouldn't be scared of that. That's dumb. We're saying, let me come with you into that fear. Let me explore that dark closet with you. Let me show you that you have what it takes. You know, we connect first. And that's exactly what your body needed in that moment, is not for you to shame it, but to go, yeah, I get it. That's just beautiful.
Yeah. And so you can imagine when I was told, you really need to stay in it. It's like,
that's a re-traumatizing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
But my body knew better. My body knew to get out.
Yeah. And as much as parts of you were taking in the bad information, parts of you were like, uh-uh, no, no, I'm going to keep fighting for myself. And you did. Mm-hmm. And you did. And you got yourself to better information.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit, what were some of the next steps you took? You finally understood this is what's happening. So then how do you begin to heal? Because obviously that naming, the accurate naming, is huge. It's huge to unlock the beginning of the healing journey, but you still have to go through the journey. And as you began to kind of put the pieces together, were there daily practices even just that began to help you really heal your body and just honor the signals in a new way?
Yeah, definitely. The thing with healing from trauma is that it's work. It's not just going to be time, and it's not just going to be, you know, once a week therapy and that's it. It's really because we have this nervous system that has been shaped from very early towards self-protection and towards looking for those things that are potentially threatening. And again, that happens below awareness. Then we need to make a conscious effort to help our bodies to see that there is still good in the world, in our lives, and to look for those things and also to practice those things. So one of the practices that I do is I have, you can call it a gratitude journal, but it's a little bit more than that. I write down things throughout the day that give me a little taste of goodness. And I don't just write it because that's going to stay in my cognitive mind and it's not going to do very much. It's going to stay there and then go away. But what I do, because I'm trying to help my nervous system really get a feel that things are different and that there's goodness, is that if I notice, for example, okay, this is just, I really like this. I picked it on purpose. This is a big glass of water and it's pink with flowers. It makes me happy. So I would look at that cup and feel the joy of like why I chose it and how I feel inside. And I would savor that for a couple of seconds. So that's the idea of taking in like the savoring just for a bit, put it down and doing that throughout the day. So if I'm walking, you know, in the past, I might walk with earphones. I really don't anymore because I'm trying to take in the goodness. So I'll look around and I'll stop for a second, take it in what that bird feels like in my body, what the sun, the air feels like in my body. And yeah, so that's what I do.
I love that. It reminds me, I think it's Deb Dana's term of glimmers.
Yeah.
Which are the opposite of triggers. And you're being intentional about noticing the glimmers. Glimmers are when our nervous system is calm, clear. It's in that good place. You keep using the word goodness, which I love. It's the fruit of the spirit. And so it's almost like you're training yourself again in that reparenting idea. You imagine with a young child, how we want our children to bask in the goodness. Yeah, and it's like almost like you're teaching yourself how to do that. I love that.
Yes, yes. And you know what's so interesting? I absolutely love Anne Voskamp. She knows it, but who doesn't? But what's so interesting was that when I was learning about like the training I did for the polyvagal theory and learning about glimmers, I'm like, this sounds a lot like Anne's work. Because Anne was writing a list of God's graces. And for me, as someone who loves God, I thought, yes, I'm going to see these things through the lens of God's gifts and God's goodness. And that just was so powerful to me because like she says, it shows us the ways that God loves us. So we get that sense that he's still active in our lives every moment. And it's the little things. It really, really is.
I think you're referencing 1,000 gifts, which you're so right. That's exactly what she was doing. I love what you're saying, Monique. And I kind of want to just pause here for a second and linger because so often when we're talking about trauma and we're talking about the activation, and it's so important to honor that. And what I love about what you're saying is it's the both and.
Yes.
You're both trying to honor what's hard and not shame yourself for the times of activation. And simultaneously, you're trying to also teach your body about what's good, what is safe, what is beautiful, what is good about God, right? It's the wholeness. It's the integration. It's not all one thing, but it is both. Yeah.
It's so interesting that you say that because that's exactly what I was thinking about before our conversation about the both and, because sometimes with just, you know, our upbringing, it's black and white, things are horrible and then there may be good. And this idea, what we want to just see is that it is a both and. We can have some symptoms that are uncomfortable, and we can have some goodness in our lives. We can have both and we can hold both.
That's incredible. That's a really powerful testimony. for lack of a better word, in the sense of the healing. I love to think of, we talk on the podcast about salvation has its roots in the word sozo, which actually means heal. It's really about the process of healing. And I hear you honoring God didn't minimize what was hard for you. And also the goodness that you taste is almost that much more beautiful for having honored what was hard.
Yes. And since this journey, I've been able to really like slow down and see things that I probably in my hypervigilance didn't even see. And so that's the other piece, is that a lot of survivors have difficulty staying in the moment because their bodies are used to being just ready for the next thing. And, you know, this idea of coming back into the land of the living, the land of the living. I just think that's just so beautiful and so hopeful.
That's beautiful. What would you say to that younger 20-something you now?
I would probably, well, first I would just tell her that I love her and that she is precious and beloved, and that there's going to be hard things, but that it's going to be okay.
That's beautiful. She is lucky to have you. What would you say to the listener who is maybe just realizing there's been trauma or who is healing from trauma? What would you want the listener to know?
You know, the very first thing that comes right out of my mouth, because I believe this with all of my heart, I feel like it's something that's been stolen. And that is that, like, I really want them to hear this truth I'm about to say. And that is that you are so beloved. You're beloved. You're beloved. That's what you're made of. And then I would say that it is possible to find joy, to experience moments of peace, fun, safe relationships, community, and that there is always hope.
That's beautiful. That is so beautiful. How can people find you, Monique? You're doing such good work in the world, bringing that hope to so many people. How can people find you?
They can find me at, my website is The Healing Trauma Podcast. And you can also listen to The Healing Trauma Podcast on any platform. If you sign up with Spotify, you will have some bonus and extended episodes, but that's how you'll find me.
Yeah, I highly recommend. I did an episode with you for the podcast that was just really incredible. You do a really great job. You've got some great people on there. You have faith focus, but you bring in people from all sorts of experts to talk about different angles about trauma. It's really beautiful.
Well, the faith component just started this past January. I'm really excited about that. So if you look at it, you might see some, you know, I've had a lot of well-known people on there, but now we're taking a little focus on trauma, healing, and faith.
Beautiful. One final question. What's bringing out the best of you right now?
Oh, I want to say the first thing that comes to my mind is my little dog that's sitting right next to me.
Oh, I love that.
I love him so much. He's just such a joy. I kiss him a million times a day. I'm going to have to say that, but just don't tell my husband or kids that I said that.
Honestly, I sometimes have two, and they just bring so much joy. Talk about that joyful goodness.
Yes.
Yeah. So, well, thank you so much, Monique, for sharing your story, for being here, and for taking your hard story and turning it into these healing resources for so many people.
Thank you for having me. It's been a joy.